This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the international LGBT news and current affairs show, every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the Worldwide Wave.
It's the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. Worldwide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show, especially for the LGBTI community. Big thank you to Dean and the Informer team and Richard for bringing us the latest in local news. In the studio tonight, hello, Alex.
Hello, hello.
Paul is here.
Hello.
And my name is Matt.
For the first time, Portugal and its capital in Lisbon will be hosting the Eurovision Song Contest this week. It is arguably the gayest singing competition in the world, so of course Joy is taking you there. Some people love it, some hate it. I'm one of the lovers. And the whole legion of people who are fanatics about it. So why do some countries actually take the Eurovision Song Contest so seriously? You know, what role does Eurovision take in advancing LGBTI acceptance? And what impact has Australians' participation in the competition had?
Pushing aside the glitter cannons to expose the secrets of Eurovision, tonight we speak with William Lee Adams, the founder and editor-in-chief of Eurovision fan site WeWe Blogs, and we will cross live to Lisbon for Joy's Mr. Eurovision, Michael, for what is happening in the on the streets of Lisbon.
Hi, Joy.
Hi, this is Janne, Mr. Gay Finland, and you are listening on the Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Why do we always feel like we need to try? Why do we believe that we need to be somebody else to feel alive? Why do we make? Why do we keep making the same mistakes? And believing that it won't make a difference if we try to break away.
Stronger.
Now, hopefully you don't need to be told that that was Jessica Melboy and We Got Love, which is the Australian entry for the 2018 Eurovision Song Contest in Lisbon.
We are talking all things Eurovision, and Joy's Mr. Eurovision is Michael. He's on the line live from Lisbon. Michael, welcome to Worldwide Wave.
Good evening, Worldwide Wave, and good morning, Lisbon. It is an absolute pleasure to speak to you, and it's even more pleasure to see the sun actually out after yesterday's rain. So everything is right with the world again.
Perhaps you've got a big gay rainbow over the city. Now, there is such a large gay following around Eurovision. What's the feel on the streets? You know, what are the gay areas like? What's happening over there?
Well, actually, speaking of the gay areas, there is a club in particular that has been having a whole heap of Eurovision nights since last week. So it's been from last week, and then this week, it's every night there's something going on. But it has been packed in there, and until the early hours of the morning. So this is the thing. Last year, people were a bit hesitant to go because it was Ukraine. People weren't sure about what was going to happen. This year, with it being in Portugal and things being so liberal in comparison, I think there are a lot more gay, lesbian, bisexual, queer in general people who are out in force. And it's also really good to see there's been a whole heap of hand-holding going on in the streets. And people who aren't necessarily fans, they're not wearing accreditation passes, or they're not wearing Eurovision gear. So it's a different sight, but I think it's still as queer as it was last year. And certainly, it's a big rainbow festival here this year.
Now, what's the gossip? We've heard that Jessica's actually got an injury. Is that right?
Well, I don't know. There's been a lot of gossip going
on. She threw her neck out is what we're hearing here. She was, doing some sort of headbanging or something. I don't know.
Wow. Well, I haven't heard anything. Brent, I haven't also been out to see the press centre in 24 hours, so I don't know. But there's been a gossip about her in general. There were things like a performance was going to change, things were going to happen. That never happened. So it's possible that she is injured. I haven't seen anything, but she does do a lot of flicking of her head. So it wouldn't surprise me if she did have a bit of an injury to her neck. Hopefully not, though, but I'll find out. I'll let you know. I'll find out for you.
That's commitment to the cause, if it is. Now, you have been getting backstage with Joy, and I've been watching lots of podcasts of your various interviews going up. So who have you been chatting to, and what have you learnt?
I have learned that there are some questions that artists get asked about 50 gazillion times, and they have no issue with answering those. But there are other questions that I like to ask that I have been asked before, which is great for me, not so great for them. It takes a bit longer for them in their English as an additional language to answer. But I've learned, look, a couple of songs are about bullying, mental health, songs with messages. I was talking with Zibs from Switzerland, the podcast is up by the way, and they were talking about how bullying has affected them. Even the brother who didn't write the song has had that effect and felt that effect. Christabel from Malta, who you'll hear tomorrow morning, she's a big fan of the Maltese LGBTIQ communities, big ally, and her song's about mental health. There's a lot of songs with messages this year. Some are, very flippant love, not flippant love, but the general Eurovision theme of love. So Cyprus and Fuego is apparently her flying pelican is all about love.
What about a good old fashioned camp one? What's the campest show that we're going to see?
Look, Fierce is Cyprus, Massive is Finland, good old fashioned fun is Moldova in semi two. So make sure you're up at 5 o'clock on Friday to see that one. The Moldovans have put together something, a bit of a cross between Pick a Box and Blankety Blank set in the 1950s. It's wonderful. It's great.
And what's your tip? Who's going to win, you reckon?
Oh, well, Cyprus has gone to number one after last night's jury performance. I love her. The music, the song is fantastic. I don't think Israel's going to win. It might do in Italy like last year, where it's the favourite, the favourite, the favourite, and then doesn't do well in the grand final. I'd love Cyprus to win. Bulgaria has a good chance. Estonia has a good chance.
But we're not hearing the usual names of Sweden, Denmark, Norway. What's going on?
I know. Well, Alex Rybak for Norway is high up there in the odds. And the thing is, we've seen his song and her song over and over and over again. So it's hard for us to judge that first-time viewing response. But I think his song is one that will... For someone who's seeing it for the first time, most of the people watching, I think that one might get a few points. So we might have another Rybak win, or at least a Rybak top five.
Bringing us the inside goss from Eurovision, Michael, thank you very much for joining us live from Lisbon, and have a fantastic week.
Thank you very much. Good evening.
That's Michael, Mr. Joy Eurovision. Our Joy Eurovision show is on Saturday nights at 8, and the podcast online at joy.org.au.
Hi, my name is Kenneth. I'm from LGB Denmark. You're hearing me on the World Wide Web.
We interviewed William Lee Adams. William is the editor-in-chief of the WeWe blog, and he has been to numerous host cities of the Eurovision. We started by asking him, what do the host cities get out of the event, and which one was his favourite?
I feel like the smaller the city, the more important Eurovision becomes, and the more kind of a cauldron of energy you feel. Because if the city's quite large and dispersed, like if it was in London, oh my gosh, it would not be that exciting because it's too big. But, you know, when it's in like a Malmö or even Baku, it just feels more special and people really get into it. People are so proud to kind of share what they have. So when you arrive in the host city, you've got the banners, right? You've got all this signage and you just feel like you're entering a bubble. It's like you're entering this Eurovision universe and you know it's going to disappear in 2 weeks, so you want to make the most of it. And the people there who live there, they also want to make the most of it. And so people are so friendly and optimistic. And I'm not trying to sound like one of these naive tourists, but honestly, when you go to these cities outside of Eurovision, the feel is totally different. Like, I've been to Copenhagen a few times, and when I was there for Eurovision, it was just, so it was different. Eurovision is the best tourist advert because it shows the city and the people at their best.
So what has been a highlight for you? Which city stands out and why?
I actually really enjoyed Kiev, and I don't know if that's just a recency bias because we were just there, but it was more exotic than, say, being in Oslo or Stockholm or Malmö. It was a strange mix of post-Soviet kind of enthusiasm and freedom mixed with old Soviet architecture, mixed with this kind of youth. They have a very youthful, vigorous, creative culture. And also it was cheap as chips, which was useful for getting around because, you know, Copenhagen was a nightmare. Oslo, it was a nightmare. And while you obviously can enjoy yourself, when the city is prohibitively expensive, you know, it's harder to enjoy. Whereas Kiev, everything was accessible. There was some awkwardness, though, I must admit, in Kiev, because obviously there was this ongoing war with Russia on the Eastern Front. And so in the city, you would see walls dedicated to dead soldiers and mothers at the walls crying. And you're like, oh, goodness, I feel like an intruder almost being here for this festival of song. So yeah, it really varied within the city itself. If you were in the area near the arena, you know, you were kind of removed from all that. But then when you're in the city center, you were much more conscious of, wow, we're having a party, but there's a lot of suffering going on still. So that was strange. But as an overall experience, it was a quite moving, exciting, interesting place to be.
What are you expecting to find when you get to Portugal? I mean, are you positive about how Portugal are approaching this?
Oh, absolutely. I think this is going to be one of the best shows we've seen. The way they approached their Eurovision act last year, doing it their own way, I think that's going to apply to their show as well. They're going to do this in an Iberian way. There's going to be that Latin fire. They're going to nod to their nautical history, their rich musical history, which has lots of jazz and soul influences. It seems like this could be a very interesting show. I think we're going to get something a bit more worldly with Portugal. I think they're having a moment as well outside of Eurovision. If you turn on the television here, if you look in magazines, for really the past 18 months, there's been a huge tourism Portugal push all over Europe. They're having this moment, and Eurovision just coincidentally fell into it. And so the contest will benefit from all of that, because there was already the tourist dollars and the infrastructure, the polishing of infrastructure more generally. And what great timing with Eurovision. And yeah, I visited actually back in August, and I met with Salvador and I met with the creative director of the show, and they were already deep into it way back then. This is a whole new world compared to last year. Things will be smooth. Lisbon is not an enormous city. It's compact. It's affordable. It's used to having tourists and hosting major events like the Web Summit. The Web Summit is massive. I can't remember how many hundreds of thousands of people go. They're used to large-scale events. This is going to be amazing. You guys, the show's going to look great. Visitors are going to have a great time. I'm so laid back about it. Normally, I'm having a heart attack at this point of the year. I'm feeling much calmer this year, and I think part of that may just be down to the Iberian spirit that's wafting over from Portugal and the fact the flight was only £40.
G'day, this is Guy Sebastian, and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Costa Gavrilidis, the president of Accept LGBT Cyprus, and you're on the World Wide Wave.
I don't know of any other radio station in Melbourne that has their own correspondent on the ground behind the scenes at Eurovision. Do you?
No,
We're it. We are unique. We are there for you. You can message us and let us know what you think on 0427JOY949 or on air at joy.org.au.
Now, we were speaking to William from the Eurovision fan site WeWee Blog, and he's been following the Eurovision Song Contest since the early 2000s. Australia is competing only for the fourth time. We asked William what he did think Australia had brought to the competition.
And I don't say this because you're Australian, but Eurovision has really opened people's eyes to Australia as a hub of culture. Like, you have some great pop music. Like, you really do. And before Eurovision, I wasn't aware of all your artists. Like, I knew Kylie. Like, everyone knows Kylie. But beyond Kylie, like, the Veronicas, this Delta Goodrum woman, Jessica Malboy. I mean, I just feel like Eurovision, it introduces us to many things, but one is Australia. It's fantastic. I really want to come there.
Now, I think it would be safe to say that you are actually quite big fans of Jessica Malboy.
Oh, you know, this song, it's funny. The first time I heard it, not going to lie, I thought it was a little generic. But the more I hear it, the more I like it, the more it loops. And because she's so good live and so charismatic and has so much personality, you don't care if it's generic, because she makes it this banger that you just want to listen to. Thing. We call something a cliche. We say that's a bad thing. No, not actually, because a cliche is something very familiar that you identify with strongly and you instantly understand. Cliche is not that. So when I say Jessica Malboy's song is cliche, please don't take it as an insult. I think she's amazing. I think the song's amazing. Jessica's personality comes through. She's so likable, and that fits with the whole message of the song. This We Got Love hashtag, she embodies that. When you meet her, when you speak to her, she is sincere, she's honest, she's open. She should be Miss Congeniality of Eurovision 2018. I don't know if everyone where she's from is like this, like what city she's from, or it's just so magical. She has a magical quality. She's also camera aware, people aware. She can relate to you. I can't say enough about her. She's amazing.
She's from Darwin, and I believe they are renowned for being very relaxed and very easygoing people.
If people in Darwin are like her, I am going there, because the girl is magic. Everyone she meets on the press tour, I'm not just saying this, people from like random fans to journalists from newspapers to heads of delegates, whoever she's talking to, she's paying attention to them and making them feel like there's a connection. And it's hard to fake that. And I think it's because she's sincerely interested in people. She's in a league of her own. That is honest to God the truth. It's amazing.
You know, Eurovision is a lot of fun, but in Europe there are a lot of big issues. I mean, you got the fallout from Brexit, you've got the refugee crisis, and that's just a couple of them. How do you think that affects the way that people vote?
So I guess before addressing this year, if we look at recent years, can she divorce 2014, after Russia's illegal annexation of Crimea, after the introduction of, you know, draconian anti-LGBT laws, this was all in the atmosphere. And while I don't think people explicitly vote on things in the atmosphere, they do take them in. Like, you watch the news, you hear things, it becomes part of your thinking. And so when watching Conchita Wurst, I feel like that tide of social change, or at least social awareness about what was going on, may have influenced some voters. 2016, the same thing with Jamala. Even if you're not a political person, if you watch the news, you would have heard Russia, Crimea, war. This woman is Crimean. She's thinking about a troubled history. There's something in the atmosphere that compels you to vote a certain way, or compels certain people, some people, to vote a certain way. But I think this year, with, you know, looking at that history, we could see it again. And the two, or maybe even three examples, are Israel, pro-woman, pro-emancipation, hashtag Me Too. This is very much in the air still. Madame Monsieur, or I can't say, I never say that right. Madame, however you say it, the French entry, the refugee crisis that's going on, people are very much attuned to this. It's on the TV screens all the time, whether it's Syria, whether it's migrants, refugees rather, crossing the Mediterranean. And their song is so, you know, sympathetic. It makes you feel something. And then finally, Italy, of course, terrorism, an enduring issue, sadly, this day and age. Yeah, these songs are so relevant to the times, I think some people could be swayed to vote for them. And I don't mean that in a crass PR way. I just mean that in a, we are humans, we have this shared existence, and so I'm going to identify with this song.
Yeah, well, I think that, yeah, coming from England, Eurovision has always been a very political, not tool, but a way to show Europe, to show the rest of their political feelings towards England, with a lot of nilpwa.
Now, Eurovision is renowned for block voting, and there's rather a lot of neighbours in the second semi-final. Do you think that will affect the outcome for the second semi-final?
Oh, yeah. I think Jessica will be safe. I can't see a juror, a serious juror, putting that anywhere below fifth place. So she's totally safe. But I guess in terms of winning the semifinal, Ukraine has a strong shot to do well here as well. I think the neighborly voting, you can't avoid it. I don't necessarily think it's always explicitly political. I think perhaps a 14-year-old girl in Ukraine, she's listened to Russian music her whole life. It's more of a cultural affinity as opposed to an explicit I'm voting for Mother Russia kind of decision, but it definitely takes place. Oh, yeah, the Scandinavians, Denmark, Norway, Sweden are all here. They'll certainly vote for each other. It's funny, when we look at block voting, I tend to think the Scandinavians are the worst at it, like in the sense that they do it the most. Even more so than kind of the former Soviet republics. That's really lucky news for Denmark, for instance, because I view that as a borderline qualifier, and having both Sweden and Norway here will help. Looking at Russia, okay, Russia, but I think she'll be safe, not only because of the Russian diaspora, which is enormous all across Europe, but also because she does have, you know, Ukraine is here, and yes, there's conflict, but there will be that affinity still. I think Yulia Smolyan was going through, and certainly kind of neighborly voting may help.
That's William from Eurovision fan site WeWeBlog. He's interesting going to Darwin. I'm not quite sure Darwin's ready for William yet, but
they can produce Jessica. I'm sure they can take William on.
He said that he thought the first time he heard it was a bit generic, and I can't help think it's probably going to be the first time a lot of people hear it, the voting people hear it. Is that going to hurt her chances?
I think it's if you have a generic or cliche song, it's then you need to up it with the show, the performance. And I'm not sure we've quite got the performance right.
No, she's got a razzle dazzle.
Yes. Is she performing alone, or because
she's performing alone.
Oh well.
So you need some dancing boys with bare chests behind. Is that the thing?
It is supposed to be, you know, it's supposed to be a party song, so it's the perfect opportunity to have dancers.
Yeah.
And they haven't taken that on board.
Guy Sebastian made good use of them. I would have thought this was time again to bring out dancers, because the last two, in between Guy Sebastian and Malboy, we haven't had any we've had two singers without dancers, so
we've also had slower songs.
Yeah, we've had slower songs, true.
There seem to be quite a few political themes in this year's, and I guess it's not a new thing, but there just seems to be a bit of a quantity. What's What's the right mix between political versus just a plain fun old campy song?
Technically, they can't have anything political.
Well, technically.
It's social issues, I think they're allowed to talk about. You've got Ukraine one with a social issue. So you're going to have people following that trend. If one country can win with the war in Crimea, then you're going to have other people following that trend because it will get votes.
Are we just missing out on some of the silliness, though? I mean, you know.
There's always plenty of servings of silliness at Eurovision.
Wait, if you want silliness, you need to watch the Belarus entry.
Right.
Yes. If you've got a strong stomach, I should say, you need to watch the Belarus.
Ooh, there's a cryptic message. We are talking all things Eurovision tonight. Coming up, we're going to talk a bit more about what it means for LGBTI rights and how William got involved in this in the first place. This is Worldwide Wave.
Big. Gotta find your mission, a mission to pursue. You know you got a talent, whatever it may be. So work your magic and sing along with me. Step one, believe in it and sing it all day long. Step two, just roll with it. A song. I say scooby booby the bop bop, boogie boogie woogie, say all day long. See, that's how you write a song. Step one, believe in it and sing it all day long. Step two, just roll with it. That's how you write a song. Step one, believe in it and sing it all day long. Step two, just roll with it. That's how you write a song. Sing it all day long. Step two, just roll with it. That's how you write a song.
Song. Alexander Rybak there with How You Write a Song. He obviously was a winner.
You don't think that is how you write a song because you're writing him off already.
Well, apparently it just takes two parts. You just come up with the idea and then you roll with it. I think it's a bit more complicated than that.
We're talking all things Eurovision. Of course, Joy has been a long time, let's say, glambassador for Eurovision, led by the Joy Eurovision show Saturday nights at 8. Michael and the whole team bringing you all the stories, all the interviews. If you haven't been to their Facebook page, their web page, which is joy.org.au/joyeurovision. They are posting by the day various interviews with all the artists, all the behind the scenes actions. It's really fantastic. And as we said, nobody else in Melbourne is bringing you this. It's just here on Joy.
Dzień dobry. I am Kylie from Poland. It's great to have a place like Joy 94.9, where we can talk about trans issues from across the globe on a worldwide wave.
And we were talking to William, the founder of the Eurovision fan site Wiggly Blog, and providing, and now he's going to provide his comment, attitude, as we ask what originally got him cooked.
So I grew up in America, and obviously we don't have Eurovision there, or at least at the time it wasn't broadcast anywhere. And I moved to England for my boyfriend, who's now my husband, and in 2007, he said, oh, you have to watch the Eurovision Song Contest. And I kind of rolled my eyes, and I was like, honey, I have American Idol. What is this Eurovision all about? And he had this idea that I love figure skating, I love beauty pageants, I love reality singing shows, so Eurovision would be perfect for me. And he was totally right. It was the year that Verka Serdutchka lost to Maria Serafovic, you know, Ukrainian drag queen wrapped in tinfoil, losing someone I perceived to be a bisexual or lesbian woman of Roma descent. It was just all these identities being thrown at me, and I couldn't believe it. It was like, you could not make this up. This was real.
In the UK, obviously, Eurovision's been broadcast forever. In Australia, it's been broadcast for a long time, though Australia hasn't been involved in it. But in the US, you know, this is more of a recent thing. So the contest will once again be shown live in the US on Logo. What kind of exposure does the contest get in the US?
Relatively few people watch Logo TV. It's very much, well, certainly it started as a niche gay channel, and they slowly started to broaden out. RuPaul's Drag Race has really helped expand that audience, but that show of course has moved to VH1 now. I'm not trying to downplay it. I think it's fantastic that Eurovision is finally airing in America. I just wish it were on a bigger network, and I speak with my friends in America who, you know, they follow pop culture, they follow the news, and they don't really know what Eurovision is still after 2 or 3 years. I guess this is the third year it's being broadcast, which is unfortunate, but it takes time, doesn't it? These things take time. But I think a positive kind of signal that it will break through is the mainstream press cover it a lot more than they used to. And Sheena Verse has a lot to do with that. Her victory, I want to say, was a watershed because it made people kind of pay attention. And indeed, many people said, oh, what is this freak show? But then after getting over that kind of nasty take on things, they started to see how wonderful it was. And now Conchitaverse, people no longer say those horrible things like, oh, what a freak show. They just see her as a singer, which actually shows that she's won. She's helping to normalize many things. And, you know, having a bearded lady on TV, whatever, yeah, just another color in the rainbow, honey. I am hoping that in the future, Eurovision might move to another network. I don't know if that's possible. Logo is a frontrunner in kind of experimental, certainly with LGBT issues, programs and formats. RuPaul's Drag Race perhaps being the biggest sign of that. But yeah, things are on the up, even if it's moving at, I'd say, a glacial pace.
Well, thank you, William. That has been a very interesting chat.
Oh, likewise. Thanks for chatting.
That is William from WeWee Blogs. The bearded lady, Conchita Wurst, very high praise there from William in terms of the ability, I guess, to cut through with a message about LGBT rights. And, of course, if you don't remember Conchita, what was her song, Rise Like a Phoenix?
Rise Like a Phoenix. Yes. One in 2014.
Right. And she really made quite a passionate speech, a victory speech. So this is enormous television audiences that it goes out to. So
200 million.
200 million. And we should point out that Conchita had to fight, or like had challenges within her own country before she won her country.
Oh, absolutely. I was going to say, because my mother's Austrian, and so I'm well acquainted with the
Was she against it?
No, not all. My mum's a great rainbow advocate, but she, but no, we're both surprised because, you know, we both laughed at the fact that Austria is, you know, really amongst the German-speaking world, you know, is considered, you know, the conservative Catholic country in the South. So, it, you know, Conchita really was. And you look at the list of those who've come before her, for the often come from countries that are not what you consider the you know, the usual home of liberal LGBTI friendly society. So, you know, the, some of the, like, Israel, well, Israel to some degree, yes, but Serbia.
And we should point out that Conchita wasn't the first LGBT contestant.
Or winner.
No.
That was
international.
Dana.
In 1998 from Israel. Again, see, this is another story of a person who really, the Orthodox religious groups within Israel were really quite open in their hostility that they would have a trans contestant representing their country at Eurovision. Dana certainly had a battle before even getting on the stage at Eurovision. But got through.
We've also had a lesbian winner from Sarajevo, Serbia, and that was in 2007.
Again, a shock entrant. I mean, just again, I mean, Serbia, even in the Balkan region, is not considered one of the most conservative countries. So, amazing.
There was a Finnish entry in 2013, which had the song "Marry Me." Female performer sang along about this. I guess the words were open; they weren't gender defined, and so you got to the end of the story and. Then she ended up kissing a female partner, so the infamous lesbian kiss. But it was really very much her statement against Finland being well behind the other countries within the region about same-sex marriage.
Yeah,
and I believe following that, the year later, Estonia had 3 kisses.
Got to do more.
Female on female, male on male, and female on male.
And I guess the other thing we should just point out, and we were sort of touching on it with Michael, is the influx of the pink dollar. Like, if you are the host country, then you're getting an influx of tourists, but you are also getting LGBT tourists who come en masse to these cities and spend time, spend money, and,
Dress up. It's called the Gay Christmas for no reason.
Indeed.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think these are, you know, more serious, but I've long rolled my eyes when people discount events like Eurovision and their impact. Like, these do have considerable soft power influence, and as you say, it does, if nothing else, countries feel like they need to sort of at least play down their hostility or during these events. So, I mean, it does have a slow creeping effect on societies throughout Europe. So, yeah, bring it on.
And you'll get a taste of all the music that is on at this year's Eurovision throughout daytime here on Joy. So just don't change the dial at all. It's Joy 94.9.
Hello, this is Wolfgang from Conchita-Wurst City, which is Vienna in Austria. You're listening to Worldwide Wave from Joy 94.9.
We would like to thank William Lee Adams, the founder and editor-in-chief of the Eurovision fan site WeWeBlogs. Now, you can find that on www.weweblogs, and that's wiwi.com. And, of course, Michael from the Joy Eurovision show.
Which is Saturday night. This Saturday night, a very, very special event, but you don't even have to wait till then. Go to their Joy page, which is joy.org.au/Joy Eurovision, and you'll see lots and lots of podcasts that they've been posting. And he's also keeping us up to date, Breakfast and Drive. I don't think he's sleeping this whole week. Breakfast and Drive right throughout the week here on Joy.
And like to thank the Facebook contributions from Roy, Trent, Virginia, Leela, Dylan, and a heap more have joined and interacted with us on Facebook this past week. Thank you.
And next week, we are looking at the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. A new book has come out called Queer Nuns, and we're speaking with the author. I think we need a bit of Eurovision flavour to take us out, though.
Well, we're getting a bit Me Too with Netta from Israel. And Toy.
Catch you next week on Worldwide Wave.
Look at me, I'm a beautiful creature. I don't care about your modern time preacher. Welcome, boys, too much noise, I will teach ya. Pum pum po, pum pum po. Hey, I think you forgot how to play. My teddy bear's running away. The Barbie got something to say. Hey. Someone says leave me alone.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. World Wide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 p.m. Eastern Australian Time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne and online at joy.org.au. You'll find all our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3 Joy on Facebook now.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.